This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And we are back. Hope you had a good holiday week while we were gone. And boy, oh boy, do we got a lot of football to unpack, don't we? Because we've got a playoff picture to sort of sort out in both the AFC and the NFC. And the football gods, at least the college football gods, gave us two good semifinal matchups on Saturday night. And listen, we don't normally get that. So we're going to talk about Georgia's win over Ohio State. And how in the world did TCU pull this off? Because I thought they were going to be massive underdogs. They were the team that wasn't supposed to be around, even after losing Kansas State in the Big 12 title game. There was supposed to be an Alabama lurking or a Tennessee still kicking around if they didn't lose, you know, their to South Carolina. And Clemson, if they didn't lose to South Carolina. But TCU is now in the championship game. But in the NFL, they went with 18 weeks. They went with 17 games. They went with an extra wild card team. And it was because of this so that you have all of these different scenarios that are starting to pop up. Now, let's be honest here. Even though we knew that the AFC was really loaded, there were a lot of good teams. In the end, there is going to be some attrition. There's going to be some teams that don't live up to the hype. And you're not going to have seven teams in both conferences. It doesn't even matter if one conference is up or the other one's up. You're not going to have every team in the playoffs with 12 wins, 11 wins. That the bottom end of it is going to be sorted out by teams that are around 8-8. And that's what you're getting right now. That's what you're getting, that the playoff picture for both conferences is not quite complete yet. There are still teams on the outside with some hope needing to win and help to get in, and they're all 8-8. They're all hovering at 500, and that's what you're going to get. And you're not going to get seven really, really good teams in the conference. But it doesn't mean it can't be really exciting. It doesn't mean there can't be really good storylines. The Green Bay Packers are a perfect example of this. I don't think anybody thought the Green Bay Packers were going to the playoffs. They looked terrible. They were losing games. Aaron Rodgers was done. Nobody knows what they're doing. Devontae Adams' trade was stupid. All of those things were being said all season long. But they've now won three straight since their bye week. They're 8-8, and they control their own destiny. They beat the Lions at home, and they're in the playoffs again. Boy, and over on the AFC, it really stemmed from Miami losing. That's allowed teams to start having a little bit of hope that they can get into the postseason. We'll talk about all of that, but we'll get to college football first next.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Hope you all had a great holiday week. We are back after being off for, six shows? We were off Friday just before Christmas, and now we're back here the day after New Year's. Lots of football to get unpacking because of the playoff picture in the NFL, but also college football. The two semifinal games on New Year's Eve was fantastic. I tell you, I don't know if college football... I don't know how to put them scheduling these semifinal games on New Year's Eve. All right, a bowl game is fine. If you want to put a bowl game on New Year's Eve, that's fine. It's not the one. Bowl games in all reality are for really the fans of the team and for college football fans in general that just want to watch bowl games. You want to put the Gator Bowl on New Year's Eve? Fine, right? The two teams that play in that, they're going to watch. Most of the country will either watch something else or do something else. But the semifinals are supposed to appeal to a larger group. It's supposed to appeal to a broader group, right? So you may not watch Notre Dame, South Carolina, for example, and maybe you don't even watch Tennessee, Clemson, because there's no other value to that game other than seeing two teams that almost got in. But the semifinals are supposed to be broad enough and important enough in the sports landscape to sort of warrant the attention of sports fans, regardless of what your college football team is, or even if you're a fan of a major college program at all. I mean, you could have gone to a Division III school and still be tapped in to a TCU-Michigan game. But I don't know where the American public is when it comes to its New Year's celebration. Is it more important to be watching a ball drop or a guy attempt a 50-yard field goal to win a game to get to the national championship. If you're just a casual sports fan, no dog in the fight, do you watch the ball or do you watch the field goal? I hope you watch the field goal because that game was insane. And the other game before it was insane. So a lot of people love to dissect everything when it comes to these games and the overall picture of college football. So what did I get after two really good semifinal matchups the next day? Well, I knew it was coming, and it started pouring in from everybody. Oh, this proves that a 12-team playoff will work. You know what? Let's just agree that a 12-team playoff is just fair, all right? Or whatever number you want to make it, 8, 16, I don't care. Let's just go, you know what? It's good for the sport. I don't know if the games will be good. I don't know if we're going to be getting nail biters in every single contest. It's just the way it should be. Let's not put extra cherries on top of the sundae that don't belong. All right? I have no idea if a 12-team playoff means every game is going to be down to the wire or an explosive fourth quarter or neither team punts. I mean, I have no idea, all right? But I do know that in the end, it's probably the best way to determine a championship than any other way that we've had in the past. Because let's be fair to the overall process of the college football playoff. Just because you got two games that were thrilling and exciting, that has not been the norm, all right? This was an exception to the rule. And the rule had always been chalk wins, and they're pretty much blowouts. All right? That's what the college football playoff has given you. For the most part, it's chalk and blowouts. And that's it. But that didn't happen here. TCU is a 3 seed, and it beat a 2. I wouldn't call that St. Peter's over Kentucky. But at the same time, look at TCU getting into this thing in the first place. How many detractors there were. Right? And that loss to Kansas State made people go, yeah, maybe Alabama should be in this thing. But the reality was that TCU was a very good football team. And they had a Heisman Trophy finalist on their offense in Max Duggan. And they were strong up front. And they didn't break. And yeah, there were some calls that went their way. And there were some calls that didn't go Michigan's way. And I don't know what targeting is anymore. But TCU was in the championship game. And they're going to face Georgia, and they could have faced Ohio State as easily. Ohio State was up 14 points going into the fourth quarter, and they blew that game. Daniel Jeremiah had a really good tweet, by the way, over the weekend, and he credited somebody else, and I wish I could remember who he credited it to. But he made a very good point and credited the right person. If you're a college football coach at a major program, if you're Ryan Day, for example, because we're going to pick on Ryan Day here, if you're Ryan Day, when are you in late game situations? When are you in tight late game situations? Hardly ever. Ever. I mean, years and years and years at Columbus, and you may get one or two moments where you have to decide what to do in the waning seconds. NFL coaches, it happens all the time. All the time. They have to get good at it. Because it's very likely they'll be asked to do it on a constant basis, on a league where parity is they're just trying for parity all the time. College football doesn't exist in that bubble. It doesn't exist in that world. So Ryan Day, with a good chunk of seconds left on the clock, had opportunities with C.J. Stroud to get the ball closer so that his kid, Noah Ruggles, doesn't have to hit a 50-yard field goal to win it in the most pressure-packed environment that college football can give you. A kick to go to the national championship game. A kick to upset the number one team in the country, an undefeated defending national champion. With C.J. Stroud, they couldn't move the ball any more than after his big run to set them in field goal range in the first place. And here was the funny thing about that. When C.J. Stroud ran down the field and got the ball around the 30-yard line, the cameras immediately went to Stetson Bennett on the sidelines at Georgia, and he knew exactly what was happening. that his late game heroics were going to be for naught because the other quarterback was as good as he was, if not better than he was, and he was going to at least move that team even further down the field. And that didn't happen. They called a run play that got stuffed. They threw a pass that was incomplete. He almost got sacked, losing 20 yards, but luckily was able to escape that, threw it out of bounds, and then it set up the kick. And of all the kicks that you will ever see in that situation, I'm not over-exaggerating here, this might have been the worst. A kick that actually got off and did not get blocked, a kick that actually left the foot of the kicker, it was the worst. I don't know if it was the snap. I don't know if it was nerves. I don't know if he was just over kicking this thing. I have no idea. But man, that thing didn't have a chance the second it left that foot. And I felt bad because I think a lot of us have not been in situations like that. Maybe in your rec league, in golf or tennis or something, we've all kind of had moments where we really want something and we fail. And that kid really, really wanted that. And unfortunately, he didn't do it. And here's the thing. He kicked a 48-yarder, and everybody's pointing out, but that 48-yarder wasn't exactly slammed through the uprights. But, man, he did his kicker no favors. So Georgia now is unbeaten, and they're going to be taking on TCU. And that game was insane, absolutely insane. And Michigan, here's the thing. Michigan came in with all, not only the hype of a two seed, right? Because remember, before we had Saturday, what did we have? Before we had Saturday, we had, again, go back to what I was saying before, chalk and blowouts, right? Those are the two things the college football playoff had given you in the semifinal round. The higher seed team won, and not only they won very comfortably. So Michigan starts the game off with a 54-yard run by Donovan Edwards, and then nothing. Right? They get nothing out of it. And here's the thing. Yes, they got hosed on two calls. But you know what? TCU held strong. Held strong on this. The defensive front was very physical. And Max Duggan was great. And that second half was nuts. Now, at the end of the game, there was a targeting issue. Because on fourth down, J.J. McCarthy threw a pass. And there was a guy coming in with the helmet, and then it was ruled no targeting, and that was it. So now people were wondering, well, what happened? Well, first of all, nobody really knows if Michigan was going to win that game or not, right? Like, you know, Michigan, with 25 seconds remaining or so, nobody knows if Michigan was going to win. But at the same time, are officials too scared to make a call like that in that scenario? That was the question I had coming out. Because it would have meant two things. It would have meant, one, that TCU player wasn't going to play in the national championship game. And it would have given Michigan an opportunity. And if Michigan had capitalized on that opportunity, that's what the game gets known for. And so I'm wondering, like a lot of people, if whether or not the officials we're kind of doing that thing of, we're not supposed to think of the ramifications of this, but we can't help but think of the ramifications for this. And that's what I was kind of wondering. Now, does this set up a matchup for the ages? I don't know. I don't know. I mean, is TCU gonna be able to do the same things against Georgia and have it work against the Bulldogs like it worked against a Michigan team that, you know, kind of was playing at that same, you know, in that same level of making as many mistakes? I don't know. But Georgia gives up a lot of yards over the last couple of games. They give up a lot of yards against LSU, and they gave up a lot of yards to Ohio State. But a couple of things about this. There was a long time. This is on Georgia now. I'll get to Georgia, and I'll get to TCU in a second. There was a long period of time where Georgia, for 40 years, right, but for mostly, if you want to go, when Mark Richt was there, Georgia was a team that always came into the preseason really hyped up, right? They had good quarterbacks, you know, Matt Stafford, Anthony Edwards. I mean, there's a lot of quarterbacks that played there. Eric Zier and Aaron Murray. And they would give you they'd give you every reason to believe, right, that they were a national championship level team under Mark Richt. But then something in the season would fail, right? They would lose to a team they should have beaten by two touchdowns, and then the dream was over. And that was in, again, the old BCS days. And even when they got into the playoff, if you remember, they lost that heartbreaker to Alabama, there was always something you could almost count it. Right? Oh, here they come. Ouch. Here they come. Darn it, they just couldn't cross the finish line. And that's how Georgia fans were for a really long time. Just waiting for the other shoe to drop on a promising season that wasn't quite good enough. And now this football team is one win away from doing something you don't see in college football at all. Win back-to-back national championships. Win back-to-back undisputed national championships. It happened to Nebraska in the 90s, and it happened to Alabama about a decade ago. But other than that, it does not happen. And it's about ready to happen to a Georgia fan base that waited 40 years to get it last year. And Stetson Bennett is going to put himself in the history books of college football. I mean, plenty of quarterbacks have won national titles, but not very many of them has led two teams to two titles in back-to-back years. And Stetson Bennett is about ready to do that. You can call him cocky, you can call him arrogant, all of that, but he's about ready to do that. And here's the other thing about this. NIL and the transfer portal is going to work out for the betterment of the college football product on the field. Nick Saban can cry all he wants, and all these other coaches can cry all they want, because whatever hurts them is going to be awful, right? Whatever bothers them, whatever hurts them, they're going to try to sell it to you as a problem in college football. It is not going to be a college problem in college football. You're seeing it play out now. You're seeing some of the benefits of it. That a TCU team that was once in the Mountain West Conference is now playing for the national championship. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that is Ron with two N's. We are going to get to the NFL and the playoff picture, including last night, the Steelers beating the Ravens and keeping their very slim hopes alive. We'll talk about that and other playoff clinching scenarios when we come back. It's Wake Up Call. Good to have you back on a Monday as we continue on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's, please. 2023. Let's get this thing rolling.
We made it.
All right, we made it. I know, here we go. 2023. By the way, real quick, rest in peace, Pelé.
Yeah,
over the week, last week. Barbara Walters, Pelé, and the other Pope.
And the Pope.
Yeah, the one that resigned.
Yeah, the only Pope to retire.
Yeah, but Pelé, could you make the argument Pelé is one of the greatest athletes in the history of mankind?
Yeah.
Not just soccer player.
I mean, athlete. I honestly think he's the greatest soccer player ever, and I don't think it's really a debate. But greatest of all time, I mean, I guess if you really look at it, like, what does he do to his sport? I mean, he made it popular.
Yeah, and that's the thing too. It's like I remember I used to have the late Bert Sugar on my show all the time, and he was, you know, the boxing guy, and we used to talk about great fighters. You know, we would talk about great boxers, and he always said, "Look, Muhammad Ali is not the best fighter ever." He goes, "But he was the most important fighter."
Yeah,
and I know if people want to get in, I can't dive into the swimming pool of Pelé as one of the greatest soccer players of all time. I don't know, right? I know he's won 3 World Cups. He's probably the biggest name, but I know his level of importance, like Muhammad Ali, right? Like Muhammad Ali stopped wars. Pelé stopped a war. Like, to play an exhibition game, there was, I think it was the Angolan War, they stopped so Pelé could play a match. He was that important. So on that level, sometimes you could, if people want to get into the overall argument of who's the best, that's fine. But if you want to, if an athlete elevates himself beyond his sport into something even greater than what he's doing athletically, you have to put Pelé on that level. I mean, he was that important and that on that global stage. So.
And I think that's where the kind of the separation is. I mean, you know, we've all heard about, you know, the greats like Pelé, Maradona, but I think, you know, Pelé, I mean, there's just something about him that like I said, it just made soccer popular.
Yeah.
You know, people knew. I mean, you can go to anybody, and they know, they've heard that name.
Sure.
And I think that's
crazy. That's,
and I think that's where it's different. I mean, you know, I look at it like, you know, the greatest hockey player of all time, Wayne Gretzky. He's like, most people know who Wayne Gretzky is.
Even if you don't watch any sports at all.
Yeah.
He's just transitioned into that level where you can talk about him with anybody, on any level.
Even if your only knowledge of him is beating was it Sugar Ray Leonard, Bjorn Borg.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
In a sprint. Exactly. By the way, you know, Super 70 Sports, keep doing your thing, man. I love that Twitter page.
He's always good. Always good. All right, so you guys know that I'm a fan of the Pittsburgh Steelers, but I've always made a promise to you, my fandom doesn't leak in. Like, if they win, I will tell you that they won well, or if they won terribly, or lost terribly, or lost. I'll try to give it to you as honest as I can. I am absolutely thrilled with this. I am so thrilled with this season. This has been a great fun last couple of weeks for this team. Really has. It began Christmas Eve. I was at my folks' house watching them play the Raiders in a game in honor of Franco Harris, and they looked, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then late in the game, they pull it out. And now you got this game last night, that old school football, right? J.K. Dobbins has got 93 yards on the ground, and Najee Harris is grinding out. That is the most grinding out 111 yards I think you will ever see any running back have. I mean, just carrying players with them. And the Steelers pull it out at the end. Clutch throw by Kenny Pickett for the touchdown. And they go on to win 16-13. They keep their playoff hopes alive at 8-8. Now, do I think the Steelers are going to make the playoffs? I don't know. They got to beat a Browns team that's going to want to beat them in general. Deshaun Watson and the Browns are playing better. They're playing better with him at quarterback. But the Steelers can't control that. They can't. They just should do what they're doing and just hope whatever happens, happens, right? Just like last year. Last year, the team was a mess, and Ben Roethlisberger was going to be Ben Roethlisberger's final season, and everybody knew it was going to be his final season. They did the whole ceremony when they played the Browns at home. They had to go to Baltimore at the end of the season to win. They had to win that game and then sit back and hope and sit back and go, well, it's unlikely that Jacksonville is going to beat Indianapolis and whatever. And it did. It happened. It happened. And they ended up making the playoffs. They got bombed by Kansas City, but the point was get in. The Steelers have won 5 of their last 6 games. They're doing so with a rookie quarterback that's learning every game on how to play in the NFL. They're doing it with a good, solid defense, and they're doing it with a running game. And now they are, again, a win away from having a winning record for Mike Tomlin. It does not matter if they make the playoffs or not. They need a win to have a winning record this season with the rookie quarterback. And something that I said at the beginning of the season, if Kenny Pickett and the Steelers can just have a winning record, playoffs or not, that's a year I will take every time. To me, there was a period of time where they had lost 4 in a row. They were 1-4. At one point, they were 2-6. They looked like a mess. Not only were they were losing pretty bad, too. Like, they had a lead on the Jets and lost to the Jets before the Jets went on their win streak. They lost in week 2 to the Patriots, where they had, again, a lead, blew it. They got bombed by the Eagles, but that's okay. And but for the most part, they were a team that just didn't win enough. They couldn't finish out games. Now, if you look at their winning streak, who have they won against? Yeah, Indianapolis, yuck. Atlanta, yuck. Carolina, well, all right, kind of yuck. Raiders, good team, freezing cold, got the turnovers, and a Ravens team that's playing without Lamar Jackson and can't score enough points. So they're not beating world beaters here, but they are beating teams on their schedule. But again, as I said earlier, you're not expecting a bunch of 11-6 teams to be vying for the final wild card spot. But it hurts me to say this because this is something I really did not want. I was sort of rooting for them. And the Miami Dolphins are really, really struggling. And I think that has now opened up the door for a Pittsburgh Steeler team at 8-8 to be alive in the wild card picture. That's the unfortunate part of this, is that the Dolphins, who are playing on another level, are losing games, and Tua Tagovailoa is in the concussion protocol again. It's just been sort of a mess at that position. That's why.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, on Twitter at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that is Ron with two N's. Robert on Facebook, can Stetson Bennett be the governor of Georgia? Uh-huh, yeah, he can. You know what's funny? My wife is a Florida Gator, and I'm a South Carolina Gamecock, and we both hate Georgia. No offense to you people in Georgia, but that, you know how it goes. We just do. So every time we drive to Florida or drive back from Florida, either way, we always make a stop at this place called Magnolia Plantation, which is on Interstate 75. It's off the highway. It's a gas station, but it's also where you get Georgia pecans. And we always stop. We always get pecans. We always get other different things, some other snacks and drinks, fill up with gas. But my wife loves the pecans, so we always get them. But right next door, as we drive in, there's a house that's adjacent to that stop. And whoever lives there is the biggest Georgia fan I know, because their lawn is filled with Georgia stuff. Just Georgia signs, handmade Georgia stuff. Like, it's, and there's always something new. And my wife and I always joke about it. Always joke about it. About how every time we come here, there's that person with all the Georgia stuff. And it's kind of neat. It's kind of cool that they're showcasing their ultimate Georgia fandom. But it always reminds me about how passionate this fan base is and how they were left 40 years with just teams that teased them and teased them and teased them, as I mentioned earlier, over and over again. And I wear my South Carolina shirts around here in Tennessee all the time. And, you know, lately it's been kind of like, oh, your school, man. And I've been getting a little bit more of that. But I always tell people, I don't have a school that has been in the top of college football. I don't have a school that has been in the running for national titles. If my school can get into a decent bowl game, that's really what I look forward to. They played in the SEC championship once. I mean, that's it. But Georgia's a different animal, man. Georgia is a different beast. That is a school that can recruit. It has recruited some amazing talent that has played there. I mean, some amazing football players went to Georgia, and played for that team. And that team has been ranked in the top 5 in preseason bowls, top 10 in preseason bowls, and only to let their fan base down with a game that they had no business losing to. And now they're on top of the football world, and Stetson Bennett, this 47-year-old quarterback who can't seem to get out of college, is doing a great job. That guy's story is amazing.
He's got two more years of eligibility, right?
Right? I mean, exactly. He can collect Social Security and lead Georgia to yet another national title.
Fill out his AARP card.
Of course. And he gets discounts at Denny's, yeah. And he wins national titles.
Movie theaters.
Good Lord, yeah. Movie theaters. That's how it works. This guy's story is incredible. I mean, incredible. Junior college player, a walk-on at Georgia. How often are you going to walk on at Georgia and be the starting quarterback?
Especially
in this day and age.
Now we're looking at, you know, back-to-back national titles.
Exactly. One win away from history.
Yeah.
From history.
I mean, forget, you know, that old adage we always say is like, oh, that guy's never buying a drink again in his life.
That's right. Oh.
It's
another level.
Was it Robert on Twitter? That was
Robert on Facebook.
On Facebook. I mean, that, you know, he's going to become governor. It's like, yeah, they're just going to hand it to him.
When
he finally gets his diploma.
It's amazing for a guy like him who knows that he's one win away from, when you're talking, you're right. You're not talking about buying a drink. That's nothing. You get business opportunities. Right? I mean, like, there's car dealerships in the works. There are things you can do if you're not an NFL level player, you can run a real estate company. There's 100 things where the door is wide open.
All right, real quick,
for
though,
you.
Real quick, because I you already said it, you put it out there. Should we not think he's not NFL quality?
I don't know.
The reason why I say that is because, listen, he wasn't college football quality.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's a huge difference.
But you know, somebody will give him a look.
Oh, right? You got to.
Of course, right?
You got to.
There's a bunch of quarterbacks.
If Brock Purdy's turning heads. I mean, you can throw it to Stenson Bennett, the fourth?
Yeah. I mean, look, they've done it. I mean, look, there have been plenty of guys in on those Georgia football teams in the past that have had cups of coffee in the NFL, whether it's a backup or movement. I don't think he's Bryce Young, for crying out loud. Holy cow, did his stock go through the roof? Right? I mean, look. By the way, the Texans, I mean, I know there's people out there who are like, and the Texans should draft Bryce Young. Hey, hold on. Slow down a little bit. They better tank that final game of the season to Indianapolis. Because if they don't and the Bears lose, the Bears get that number one pick.
Yep.
That half game, that tie is going to bother the Texans if they win. Because they'll be 3-13-1, and the Bears are going to be 3-14.
Yep.
So it's not a done deal yet. But the Bears aren't going to draft a quarterback. So that's cool. But they're not going to have what I'm pointing is that the Texans aren't automatically going to have the number one pick. Who knows? If you might look at Justin Fields and go, thanks for everything in these 2 years that we had you. Bryce Young was so good against Kansas State. Whew. So, I know he's got everybody buzzing. And if you're Houston, whether you're picking one or two, he's likely to be your selection at that spot. But going back to Stetson Bennett at Georgia, it is a fantastic story. It's a Disney story. It's all of that, right? You know, junior college, walks on at Georgia. That's the thing. I mean, walking on at Georgia at quarterback is like Rudy at Notre Dame, for crying out loud. You got no business being here. There's five-star level talent here, right? I mean, there's players that we went after, that we promised things to, that we sat down with their parents and said, this kid could go anywhere, and he's going to play quarterback. We want him to play quarterback here. He goes there. He wins that job. He not only wins that job, now he's, again, putting himself in history. Look, you go to Nebraska and Alabama, and that's it in recent college football. I think Pete Futek pointed out, you got to go back to, like, Army in the 40s to see a team with an undisputed, we're not sharing this title with anybody, championships, right? And that's Alabama in the pre-college football era, and Nebraska in the 90s with the old please vote us number one system. But that's how big this is. That's how big it is for them. Now, TCU, you can use all the sports analogies you want, right? The clock struck midnight. That was their game. I don't know, man. I don't know. That's a very physical team. They believe in themselves. That Max Duggan kid has got no fear. I don't think he's going to be afraid to sling it around a Georgia defense that has no problems giving up yardage. That's for sure. But it's another juggernaut that they're going to have to climb on Monday at SoFi Stadium. So. All right, so again, NFL, the Green Bay Packers were left for dead, but now they've won four straight, and they beat up a Minnesota Vikings team that did not look like it wanted to be there at all. I know we say that a lot, but that Vikings team was miserable, abs miserable. I mean, Kirk Cousins threw three interceptions. Green Bay wins 41-17. They are now 8-8, and they have now put themselves in a position to win and get in. And that's the best scenario, obviously. If you're not clinching by week 18, this is the best way to do it. Home game, even though you're playing a hot Lions team, you've won four straight. Win your game. You do not need help. You do not need to watch the scoreboard. And that's the Packers. If you had told me, even when they beat the Bears the first time before their bye week, if you had told me that the Packers were going to be in a position to win their final game and make the playoffs, I would have said, look, you can sell me on them needing a win and some help. But I can't believe you would sell that I would have bought, even with Aaron Rodgers, because that team couldn't score, a opportunity to win one game, and then they're in the postseason at 9-8. I would not have taken that at all. But Seattle is still in the mix. Detroit is still in the mix. I think Detroit needs a win and a Seattle loss to get into the playoffs, if I'm not mistaken. Congratulations to the New York Football Giants. They are in the playoffs. They beat Indianapolis rather handedly, 38-10. They're in the postseason for the first time since 2016. Should that not lock it up for Brian Daboll as coach of the year?
Yeah.
Yeah. As much as we love Doug Peterson.
I know.
Yeah.
But then again, I don't know. I mean, if Doug Peterson is able to turn this Jaguars team around.
They beat Tennessee.
Beat Tennessee next week.
That's probably, that would put him in the mix, too.
It has to be one of those two.
Yeah. I think we're all caught up in Brian Daboll being his first year, and Doug Peterson's like, well, he did win a Super Bowl, but he was going down to a complete and utter mess.
Yeah.
And is about ready to turn that team into a playoff team.
Well, not only that, but I mean, you know, now for the first time ever, we're sitting back going, yeah, Trevor Lawrence actually does look like a quarterback.
Oh, he looks great. 14 touchdowns, one interception in his last seven games.
Yeah.
He's been great. He's been great. So I was on, Eton Shander was filling in on a network over the week that we were gone, and I did do a segment with them. We were kind of talking about certain situations in the NFL. And he had made the point, look, the way it's shaping out is you have this Thursday night game for the Titans, and you have this game for Jacksonville where they're playing Houston, and in neither game mattered at all for either team. It did not help or hurt what that outcome was. And every now and then you get that. You don't get it a lot, but every now and then you get it where the coaches realize we don't have to do anything. There's nothing we can do. We can win by 100, and we're not helping our chances. And we can lose by 100, and we're not hurting our chances. And that's why Thursday night you saw Derrick Henry had a hip injury. It's a nagging injury, but it's certainly not an injury that keeps you out of an NFL game.
Right.
But you don't have to play him against Dallas. You want to look at Josh Dobbs just to see what you have? That's the game to do it, right? That's the game you do it. Jacksonville, though, just annihilated Houston and had no problems doing so. Well, but again, it didn't matter because it sets up a winner-take-all matchup.
I did watch that game because it was my local game.
Right.
And although, I don't think Jacksonville really tried to annihilate the Texans.
It just happened. It just kind of flowed.
If you get to a point in the game where you go, I don't think Travis Etienne is coming back into the game.
Right. Yeah.
And this was at halftime.
Because it was like 21-0 or something, right?
He had nine carries for 108 yards.
Yeah, and you're done. You don't have to play
him. I think two touchdowns or three.
Yeah, C.J. Beathard got playing time.
Yeah.
Like, C.J. Beathard got in the game. And again, it sets up, again, winner-take-all.
And that's why it was flexed.
That's right.
It was flexed to Saturday. I mean, we're talking about the Chiefs being flexed out of a primetime game.
Yep. So we can watch Trevor Lawrence and the Tennessee Titans fight for the playoffs. The playoffs start now. Week 18 in the NFL. Playoffs start today.
Would you ever think you would say that statement at the beginning of the year? That's why the NFL is so awesome.
Quick question before we go to break. Quick question. If the Lions were in a situation where a win would get them in, and that's it, they didn't need help from Seattle, would that Packer game be flexed? Because I got to think that game would have been flexed. Right? Green Bay and Detroit over Tennessee and Jacksonville? I think
Tennessee-Jacksonville is a Saturday.
Oh, okay, so that's a Saturday. What's the game on Sunday then?
Well, all those times are still, when I looked last, they all said to be determined.
Okay, so do they flex a Saturday game?
They flexed the Saturday game.
Oh, okay, so the Saturday game got flexed. Oh, yeah. Okay, that makes sense. All right, so what's the Sunday night game then? They decided that?
They haven't decided, no.
I didn't look. I went right to bed as soon as the Steelers won that game.
You have, we have two Saturday games, Chiefs-Raiders. That's at 3:30. That was flexed. And then Titans-Jaguars. The Sunday night game, or Sunday games, everything is still to be determined. So hopefully we find that out later on today.
Do they have a Sunday night game on the last game of the season?
Yeah. They did last year.
Remember that wrap it all up. Yeah, they did. Yeah,
last year was Raiders Chiefs.
What is it that they don't? Oh, they don't do Monday Night Football.
They don't do Monday Night Football.
Monday Night Football. Nobody plays that game.
Nah, because everyone's getting fired.
Everybody. Yeah, right. That's the day they need it. Right now, it looks like they don't have anything. All the times are wide open for Sunday.
Yeah.
So Saturday night, I got a wedding to go to. I'm not kidding.
What?
I hate weddings.
What?
I got a wedding to go to. My neighbor's kid is getting married.
Well, you know what? Get it on your phone.
You know what, though? It's in the afternoon. I don't know. It's the reception. That's my biggest thing. Can I get out of the reception? And can I leave the reception?
Well, no. Here's all you need to find out.
I mean, dude, I got this on my phone. I've got YouTube TV.
Yeah, you got that? But
I was watching TV in my car on the way down to Florida for vacation.
Yeah, you shouldn't do that when you drive.
Right? No, right, but I wasn't driving.
All you need to do is find out. Hey, are there TVs at this venue?
Good point. Good point. All right, on Twitter at Tony D Radio at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. It's Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us again. Monday Night Football tonight, Cincinnati and Buffalo. These are the two stalwart teams of the AFC. You know, Kansas City obviously in that picture as well. Josh Allen and Joe Burrow. There's still some positioning that needs to take place at the top. It's kind of like that. The Dallas Cowboys, for example, have a chance to win the NFC East, and not only win the NFC East, but they have a chance to be the number one overall seed in the NFC. Because the Eagles have now lost back-to-back games with Gardner Minshew at quarterback. They rested Jalen Hurts again with that shoulder injury. But there's still a lot of wiggle room in terms of seeding. But if you're just paying attention to teams that need to win to get in and what they're playing for, you've got Seattle, Detroit, and Green Bay. You've got the Steelers over in the AFC, the Dolphins in the AFC as well. So there's still some teams that are vying for playoff positioning. Jacksonville and Tennessee playing for the division. I think one of those teams, I think Jacksonville is in better shape to be in the wild card picture as well. It's still wide open.